Continuing, Rasa Panchadaya, Ras Lila, 10th Canto Bhagavatam, Chapter 29, Verse 18, we were discussing, started yesterday. Sri Bhagavan Avacha, he's speaking, Krishna's speaking to the gopis. These are his opening words when they assemble before him on the banks of the Yamuna under the Sharad Purnima. Swagatam Vo Mahabhaga Priyam Kim Karavani Va Rajas Yana Mayam Kachit Bruta Agaman Karanam. O ladies of Vrindavan, you're very fortunate, you're very dear to me. I'm very pleased that you have come here. And I hope everything is well in Vrindavan. Now please order me. What can I do for you? What is the purpose of your coming here in the dead of night? Kindly take your seats and let me know. What may I do for you? This is Prabhupada's translation extracted from the Krishna book. We left off asking, Jiva Goswami said, why did Krishna ask these questions, interrogate the gopis, and speak in a very indifferent way, disinterested way, official way? Very ironic and paradoxical. And then this whole section is a dialogue, conversation between Krishna and the gopis. And Ujjala Nilamani, Jiva Goswami quotes, and he says, this is prem samlap, samlap, conversation back and forth with external meanings and internal meanings. External meanings for the regular readers of the Bhagavatam, and internal meanings for the worshippers of the gopis and the followers of the six Goswamis. Sri Jiva Goswami Pad, he said that Krishna asked these questions for two reasons. This is a brief review. One was to taste the nectar of the love from their mouths, because he was taking a, as we mentioned yesterday, he was taking a bhamya bhav, a mood of not submission, which usually the man is submissive to the woman at times. The times when greeting them in the beginning, oh, you look so beautiful, welcome, so happy you came, I'm so glad. But he's acting contrary way, which is usually the way the gopis act. Oh, I'm not that interested. And Krishna has to praise them and encourage them and woo them and seduce them to enjoy. But he wanted to burn them so much with his indifference and contrary mood, his bhamya bhav, that they would be forced to speak. What are you doing? We can't go home. We came here to be with you. We want to please you. So he wants to relish that sweet nectar of the revelation of their avahita bhav, that bhav that generally they hide under so much laja, so much woman's natural shyness. And that's their lakshana as a woman, their characteristic, but it's also their weapon in love. It's the woman's greatest weapon, playing hard to get and indifferent, bhamya bhav. So one, Jiva Goswami says, to force them to reveal the hidden, intense attachment and love that they have for Krishna. And then the second point is he wants to increase their attraction to him and their longing to attain him. So that we see that even with conditioned souls, Krishna often acts indifferent towards us. He acts very contrary. He says, Krishna, I've come to you. I've surrendered to you. I'm trying to worship you. He doesn't show himself, or he talks in contrary ways. Doesn't really talk to us. I wouldn't say that. But it appears by our perception, our experience of our relationship with Krishna as a beginning, aspiring, premi bhakta, that he's very indifferent and not really interested. But he is. But he wants to increase our attraction to him, karshan, and increase our longing to attain him. So that longing is that utkantita, that intense anxiousness, kada, 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 when. It's everywhere sprinkled in the bhajans and tattva, the Goswamis and Narottam Das and Bhaktivinoda, every bhajan, when. When will I attain this service? When will I see you? When will I get free from this maya? When will I attain Vrindavan? When will I roll on the ground of Vrindavan? When will I see Govardhan with my eyes of love, with eyes of love and a heart filled with sattvic bhavs? When will I take long drinks of the Yamuna water and appreciate the sweet nectar therein? All these kada, kabe, kabe, kada, kada. It means when. Krishna is doing the same exchange with his gopis, increasing their attraction to him, increasing their longing to him. This is his play, his love play with his devotees. So we're discussing line by line. We're starting now. And referring to Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary here, what he has to say about these things, because his insight is most anukulya for Ragmarg and insightful and revealing, that he can somehow reveal the hearts of the gopis and the minds of the gopis and the hearts of Krishna, the heart of Krishna in his mind. The first point is Swagatam Vo Mahabhagha. Swagatam. Very official Sanskrit word of greeting. There's no friendly mood there. It's very much Shanta Ras, long way from Madhurya Ras, with the speaker Parikya Bhav. Welcome, sir. Welcome, sir. Welcome, sir. Good morning, sir. How can I serve you? How can I please? Inconceivable if you try to even imagine or meditate on this scene, the opening scene of the love story. Oh, you. Acha, welcome. As Krishna is greeting the gopis as if he didn't even expect them. Oh, you've come here. Oh, well, why did you come here? Am I something to do with me? Or it must be you want to see the full moon beams dancing on the Yamuna, or smell the blossoming kumudis or malikas. Or maybe you want to see the forest under the shimmering rays of the moonlight passing through the leaves overhead of the trees. So please, sit down. I'm very curious. I can't really understand. What is your reason for coming here? I mean, if you seriously chant japa, meditate on each verse, mantra upasana, and worship that verse, and worship the lover and the beloved in the verse, and worship the lila stan, and worship the exchanges, and worship the bhavas, and worship guru, and pray for what's guru doing at this time, and his sakhi sarup, and what would I be doing, and how would I be feeling, and how would he be feeling, then so many sweet revelations and insights may manifest by the mercy of Chaitanya Guru and the Guru Varg. 9.1. Welcome, most fortunate gopis. So what does Vishnu, he imagines this discussion. Oh, most fortunate ladies, welcome. What may I do to please you? That was the translation. Vishnu Chakravartipad said, he opens by establishing something about the exchanges between men and women in conjugal affairs, intimate love affairs. In loving exchanges experienced between men and women of this material world, the usual custom is that the woman, the Nayaka, will not like it. She will not like it and become angry if her lover openly reveals his eagerness for conjugal enjoyment. So he said, I didn't come for anything particular. Just came to say hi. But if he's obviously on the attack and aggressive, then, hey, slow down. This is not the way. So then he says, with this in mind, Krishna first addresses the gopis in accordance with the standard manner of mellow dealings, saying, welcome. He's speaking in pleasantries, a very gentle language, and unassuming, unrevealing of his true intentions and burning desire of his heart. It's grihita manasa. When he played his flute, it says, grihita manasa, the minds of the gopis were seized by that karshan or that flute. But Krishna's mind, now seeing the beautiful Sumadhyama Braja Sri gopis before him, his mind is fully grihita manasa, fully seized by attraction, interest, and intense spiritual lust. But swagatam, please sit down. Was your trip here, your yatra, your agaman, was it pleasant? You are greatly fortunate, ladies, Mahabhaga, in that your whole lives you have never had to look misery in the face. So then he gives another meaning. He says, or else this is not actually a question, it's actually a reply. Krishna is saying, actually saying, your coming here is very auspicious. It's quite fitting because you're greatly fortunate, ladies. And thus, everything you do brings success and happiness, both for you and others, like me. So what can I do to please you? So the internal meaning is Mahabhaga, Swagatam. Oh, you are greatly fortunate, ladies. Wherever you go, you spread fortune. If someone is a very rich man, then when he goes somewhere, then he doesn't give one rupee to the pandas. We went once with one wealthy industrialist from Delhi, and we went to Varsana after Mangalarti. And he went around, and all the Brahmins were saying, well, Don, he gave everyone 1,000 rupees. Because he already calculated, I'll bring 1 lakh of 100,000 rupee notes and pass it out. So he was very popular wherever he went. So because he's a greatly rich man, so wherever he goes, his wealth and richness is shared by all. Swagata Mahabhagha, Rajastri. You're so fortunate. Wherever you go, you spread fortune in all directions. So you've come before me to make my life fortunate. That's what he says. You've come to bring success. Fortune means success. Fortune means happiness. You're fortunate if you have good health. And good health generally generates peace of mind and healthy mind, happy mind, happiness. And so he says, you're spreading good fortune and happiness wherever you go, and especially for me. I'm really fortunate. I'm saying, Mahabhaga, you're fortunate. You're fortunate. I become fortunate in association with you, that most fortunate gopi. That's what he's saying. So now that I've received all this fortune and blessings from your side, contribution to me, you've increased my success and increased my fortune, certainly my happiness and ecstasy by appearing here. What may I do to please you? This is the first point, he says. Now he goes on in this particular first line, one more line. He says, what does he say? Oh, it's on here. Please tell me what gratifying hospitality I can offer to you young girls who have come to me to pass the night alone in this secluded forest. It appears that you have come here to listen to the singing of the night birds and possibly watch the movements of the stars and moon as the moon traverses across the sky. So what hospitality? Would you like a chair to sit in or some herbal tea to drink? Or should I plug in an electric fan for you? Hospitality is a long way from conjugal intimate affairs. Hospitality is just that. A comfortable chair, something to eat or drink, and some arrangement. Please tell me in simple words, what will give you pleasure? Since I am indeed eager to satisfy you, then certainly without a doubt, since you are my honored guests, I will carry that out in my utmost ability to please you, having come to visit me at my domicile here on the bank of the Yamuna, under the Vat tree. So now Krishna is expecting the gopis to say something, because when we say something we drop a bomb in someone's ears, then we can expect some words in reply, and maybe even fisticuffs. If you know what fisticuffs are, this is fist. It's cuff. Krishna's saying this official language, swagatam, mahabhaga. I want to be very hospitable to my newly arrived guest. Practically, he's treating them like Atithi Narayan. Atithi Narayan. Atithi Narayan. It's most unexpected arrival. You have come here? Why? How is it possible? Is something wrong? You ran away because there's an emergency and there's a fire in your house and you're looking for someone to put it out? So you ran to the Yamuna to bring water to put out the fire? You brought pots with you, empty pots you're going to fill up with Yamuna water and run back to your house and douse the fire, put it out? So he knows that his language is not, maybe won't be so much accepted. So he's anticipating the reply of the gopis, which he thought that they may say something. That's why Prabhupada says, an intelligent man thinks twice before he speaks something, because I'm about to say this to so-and-so. But now he's thinking, now if I say that, the reaction may be this, or this, or bye, or get lost, or can't stand you, or whatever. Don't come back. So Krishna's, I don't know if he thought when he spoke, but now he's thinking. He expects the gopis to reply to his statement and say, how do you say bold one? Durt? Durta? Durta? Bold one. Oh, Durt. Oh, bold one! Aren't you ashamed to speak to us like this? We are faithful to our husbands. Why are you speaking in such an audacious way? Don't you have any fear of God's laws or the king? So this is his comment in this first line that they're saying, is there something wrong? You left your houses or something? He said, we're faithful to our husbands. And why you're speaking so audaciously? Actually, we have come here for some other reason. So now the second line says, then he says, first he says, Priyam Kim Karavani Bha. He said, why? Then he asked the second question, is everything all right? Is everything all right at your home in Braj? Must be some problem why you came here. Excuse me. First he says, how can I please you? Oh, most fortunate ladies, welcome. What may I do to please you? Priyam. They translate it pleasing. Priyam kim karavani va. And then the commentary on that is this. It's here. Overwhelmed with shyness, however, lajabhav, the gopis remained silent when Krishna spoke indifferently with his opening words. Seeing the response of the gopis to his statement, Krishna takes it to mean be a sign of their agreement. And then, because they're not, he's just saying, they're not doing anything, they're not responding, because they say silence is agreement. Prabhupada says that, silence means agreement. If someone proposes something, you're quiet. I think we should do this, and no one says anything, then it means you'll do that. So then Krishna thinks like this. He says, this here. Krishna takes this to be a sign of the gopis' agreement to have physical contact, because they didn't reply. He anticipated they would say, oh, bold one, oh, audacious one. So then he says, so he implies this by saying, what can I do to please you? Thus Krishna is thinking, this is Krishna's thinking, the thinking of God, Vishnu can tell us. As in union, conjugal union, there is pleasure in the reversal of roles. So in the act of meeting lover and beloved, contrariness is also pleasing, having displaying an opposite mood or apparently disinterested mood. And Krishna is thinking, if these gopis are not going to resort to their normal tricks tonight, then I'm going to play a few tricks of my own to conceal my own actual eagerness. So now Krishna is adopting avahita bhava, which is usually reserved for the nayaka. and as a sanchari, and then he's going to hide his intense eagerness to enjoy with them. And then he's thinking, Krishna, because the gopis have lost control of themselves due to drinking the nectar of my enchanting flute, they're behaving against their natures and are now acting in a contrary way by becoming submissive. So usually the gopis aren't submissive to Krishna. They're very, hey, you called us, okay, you called us. But somehow this particular night, Maharaj dance, he called them and they became vimohayan. They became bewildered. So they lost their ability to act and speak as they usually do, in a very disinterested way, in a very bhamya-bhav way. So he says, oh, this is very interesting. They're acting contrary, opposite of their natures. So I'm going to act opposite and contrary to my natures, just as in loving dealings, reversal of the roles enhances the pleasure. Man is usually aggressive and the woman's passive. And so if the woman becomes aggressive and the man becomes passive, that's reversal of roles, viparita. Viparita keli, rati keli. So then he's thinking, oh, so now they're playing very submissive. So I'm going, as they always play tricks with me and make me perspire so much and give me so much trepidation and trembling in my heart by their disinterest in their bhamya-bhav, I'm going to play a few tricks on them tonight. So it seems that by hearing my flute, they must have become intoxicated. They forgot how to act in a contrary way. Very interesting. Therefore, I should be compassionate with the gopis since I have not lost control of myself. So now he's really showing his avahita bhava and controlling it, the volcanic force of his rising passion to enjoy with them. I have not lost control of myself, brackets, yet. I should favor them, the gopis, by externally pretending to be contrary to increase the taste of love in these pastimes, while inwardly retaining my natural eagerness to enjoy with them. That's Krishna's hiding his svabhav. What is Krishna's svabhav? His mentality, his natural way of thinking and feeling is extremely eager to enjoy with the gopis. When you read in any Rasa Granth, Govinda Lila Marita, Krishna is always grabbing their cholis and he's very aggressively showing his eagerness. Hey! You know, you're just walking along the footpath, some gully in the forest, and Banvihar means Brinda Devi's leading the way, and she's taking them through the Sadrituvan, the six seasonal forest. Oh, Krishna, look, this is the Hemant. This is the Hemant Ritu Van. And you see there's the birds of Hemant season. These are the trees, and it's very chill is in the air. And so Krishna's walking with his arm around Radharani, and his flute is just in his right hand, on his walking like this. And Radharani has her lotus flower in her left hand, and Vrinda Devi's pointing out the different types of winter birds in Hemanta season, and that's particular trees that maybe even blossom then at that season, and the different features, the chill air and the features of the Hemant season. Then Krishna, his arm is around Radharani, then he puts his hand, starts to go like this, drops off Radharani's shoulder and goes like this. Ha! And Radharani takes her Leela Kamala, her pastime lotus, her little lotus for Leela, it's called Leela Kamala. And she top, and she hits Krishna right on this beautiful sesame flower nose. And and his arm goes back to her shoulder. Oh yeah, that's a nice tree over there. That's very nice. So at every opportunity, Krishna's burning with eagerness to touch Radharani, to caress Radharani, to fondle Radharani, to please Radharani, to dance for Radharani, to love Radharani. So now it's extremely great power of yoga being displayed here. He's going to fully, a yogi fully controls his mind and senses. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, urapashta vegam. So now Krishna is showing, yes, I am really yogi. I mean, Shukadeva Goswami said 3 verses ago that I was Yogeshwareshwara. So I'm going to show how much I'm the best of all yogis tonight. In this particular, this third scene of the love story, the Prem Samlap, the dialogue between the gopis. So then he, in the second, he asks, what can I do to please you? Then he says, he asks, that's his first question, how can I please you? Then he said, well, if you run away from your home, you run away from your home and your mother-in-law and your husbands, there must be some karanam, as it says here, agaman karanam. What is the cause? Is something wrong in Braj? Your husband threw you out or banished you to the forest for 14 years? That sounds really good. It'd be great if the gopis would be banished by their mother-in-laws. And Jatila one day said, Radharani, I banish you to the forest for 14 years. You can't come back to Yavit. Radharani would be out of the house before she finished the sentence. Ananda Kandavagavana ki. Like Ramchandra, Kaikeyi or Dasaratha, induced by Kaikeyi, banished Ram to the forest, and everyone cried and was so sad. Now, Ram was sad to leave their coronation, day of their coronation, that her husband would be the Raj, the Samrat. Now they have to run to the forest like hermits and sannyasis and live so simply. And they were lamenting and unhappy about that. But if Radharani got that sap or a curse or command, she would, oh, this is the happiest day of my life. Let me be banished to the forest forever. Or better, the Pandavas. The Pandavas, they lost some gambling match and they had to go to the forest called Banbas. How, 13 years? Huh? Oh, 12, one of those 12-year programs. Right? So 12 total. 13, that's what I mean. So they had to go for 13 years. And if they were discovered, somehow they were discovered, they have to go for 13 more years. Now just imagine if that was, if Jatila said that to Radharani. Listen, I banish you to the forest for 13 years. And if you get discovered, you have to go another 13 years. All right, Jai, right. She would be so happy because she would spend the rest of her life in the forest with Ban Bihari, Sham. But now this is Krishna saying, is everything okay in Braj? Something has happened. You have your straw house burned down on Diwali, or what happened? And you came out to ask for a donation to put on a new roof, or. So what does Vishnu Chakravarti say? He says, is everything okay? I mean, are you okay? Are you okay? Some lady comes with all distress in her face. And they, if you're, say you're home, you're just home, sitting on your veranda, and you're in a whimsical mood, and you can't sleep that night because of the full moon. So then you sit on your veranda, and you play the flute or the murli. Just looking at the moon, playing for Mother Nature and your own edification. And suddenly, door knocks, and someone runs in, huh? And they run, oh, hey, what happened? What happened? Everything's okay. So this is Krishna saying, what happened? Something wrong? And the gopis are looking at, what happened? You is what happened. You is what happened. Your flute is what happened. You know what happened. You happened. You happened in my life, and that was that. So Vishnu says this, is everything okay in Braj? Krishna's asking the gopis 3 questions. He's saying, yeah, they came, they're right in front of him. This is the opening dialogue, the Prem Samlap, where Krishna, the first words Krishna says to the gopis, he calls them with this murli, and then he speaks to them as if they're some Sanskrit pundits, with very official language, displaying a very contrary mood. Disinterested mood, which is quite opposite Krishna's nature at a time like this. Swagatam Mahabhaga. Welcome, O Pandit Radharani. Welcome, O Pandit Lalita. He's greeting them as if they're Sanskrit pandits rather than, hey Priyaji, hey Pyariji, Pyariju. So we're discussing that from Vishnu Chakravarti's viewpoint. So the second question he asked them, he asked three questions. First he says, welcome, what may I do to please you? And he said, is there something wrong at your home? Is everything well and all right and Braj at your home? And the third question he asked them is, what is your karan, agaman, agaman karanam? What is your reason, cause? Why did you come here? So Vishwanath is discussing, and we're just reading those tikas or commentaries and trying to mention something about it. So here when he asks, is everything okay? The verse says that. So he's considering these ideas. Firstly, a small review we covered. Vishwanath is revealing that the gopis apparently are acting in a very submissive nature. And now Krishna sees, oh, they're acting very submissive. Maybe they become bewildered by my flute playing, vimohayam. So usually they're not submissive. They have bhamyabhav. They're very contrary and they act as if they're disinterested. And then they cover their eagerness to be with me and their eagerness and enthusiasm to enjoy and have my intimate association with their avihitabhav. Avihitabhav, they cover. Oh, yeah, we came. You called us, we came. So now Krishna is thinking, Vishnu is telling, that usually the gopis are very tricky and they have very tricky behavior and confuse me. And I have to become very submissive and praise them and flatter them and compliment them to woo them and seduce them and attract them to fulfill the eagerness I feel in my heart, which I can hardly control in their presence. But now they're acting with dakshin bhav, Vishnath is telling. So now I'm going to act with bhamya bhav and I'm going to cover my eagerness with this avihita bhav. I'm going to cover it. Pretend that, oh, welcome, yeah, you came to see the moonshine or smell the flowers. Oh, maybe there's something wrong. There's some calamity in your home in Vrindavan, I mean, Braj, Barsana, Chitsoli, whatever. And you've come to elicit my help. You want me to go there and help out, lend a hand. So then he explains this here. Is everything okay? So considering these ideas, how he wants to relish this opposite role in their exchanges, he brings the conversation with the gopis to the level of contrariness by inquiring from them with concern and apprehension, as if some disturbed or anxious friend comes to you in the middle of the night, a very anxious look in their eye, and they say, oh, you all right? You try to solace and comfort them in a very concerned way. So Krishna is acting with apprehension. Is there perhaps a calamity or some accident in your home? And he's very concerned. And then he says, is everything all right? Has Indra or anyone else created a disturbance which has filled you with fear and sent you here seeking my protection? Because in Braj, whenever there's some upheaval or some disaster, everyone turns to Krishna, 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 Mahabhaga. They turn to Krishna in any, all the time. And so and they ask, they only depend on him for everything, even protection. Oh, perhaps you've come to seek my protection. So then this is the one point he says in this relation. And then why have you come? And then you can say, why is he asked these questions? These three questions. And then I have a note here it says, the Krishna knew perfectly well, it's quite obvious, it's just to increase the love. He knew perfectly well why the gopis had come. He deliberately called them, he invited them and called them and forced them to come there. Grihita manasa. In the opening verse, grihita manasa, that his flute entered their minds in such a way and just captured them. Grihita. It seized them. They couldn't say no. When Krishna played the flute, they couldn't say no. I won't go. I have control over my heart. my mind and senses. I won't respond to his flute. He captured them. He sees them like some tiger seizes a prey. Just, the flute just came in and seized them and stole them from their homes and took them there. So this is so how did he seize them? He seized them with the romantic melodies of his flute. So Krishna, what was he doing now? He's teasing the gopis by asking them, why have you come here so quickly? Is something wrong in your village? Why have you come here anyway? What do you want? This is a very contrary action of Krishna to speak like this or act like this. So the gopis were naturally innocent and they were bewildered by such questions as they. And they thought, you called us for love and we responded. And here we are. And now you're playing like this. So Srila Prabhupada, he gives a small tika on this also, a commentary. I believe so. He says, the gopis, this is from Krishna book. If you read the Krishna book of Srila Prabhupada a little minutely, you can find where he translates the verses and then oftentimes includes some commentary on that verse for the whole Rasa Leela or the whole Bhagavatam. The Braja gopis had come to Krishna to enjoy his company, to dance with him, to embrace him, and kiss him. And when Krishna began to receive them very officially with this contrary and different language, swagatam, welcome, please sit down, take a seat, is everything all right? How can I please you? Very officially, showing all kinds of etiquette, the gopis were surprised. We're your lovers, we're your prayasis, your priyajis. Why? What's going on? They were bewildered. Krishna was treating the gopis as if they were ordinary society women. Therefore, the gopis began to look at each other and smile, like, what is this? And they very eagerly listened to Krishna talk in that way. And Srila Prabhupada's brief purport to this verse number 18 is quite sweet and very specific. And Prabhupada is not hiding anything in the relationship between Krishna and the gopis. They came to embrace him, to dance with him, to kiss him. It's very, very explicit. And this is 1968-69. Prabhupada wanted to nourish his followers and disciples with the intimacies of these highest exchanges of pure divine love between Radha and Krishna. He didn't use some kind of official language. He's straight to the point. So this is the flow of the Ras Leela. This is actually the one, actually a godbrother of ours. He analyzed this and he said it's almost like a play or drama. And there's different scenes. So this is the scene that he calls this scene 3, where there's conversation. This goes on for so many verses where Radha and Krishna, the gopis rather, we don't know who's speaking, although some are identified. They're discussing the whole principles of love and all these points. And then I just want to summarize this point that Krishna welcomed the gopis with praise. He praised them by using, if you use an honorary word when someone arrives, if you say swagatam, that's a very respectful word, which actually praises in one sense the person, the guest or the person you're meeting. And then he said, Mahabhaga. And it means you're so fortunate. You're so. And Vishwanath, as we said, he takes the word Mahabhaga. Krishna's telling the gopis, you're very fortunate. And Vishwanath is saying that actually Krishna's thinking, yes, the gopis are Mahabhaga. They're much greater than thousands and thousands, Sahasra, Sahasra, Lakshmi Devis. Apara, Siddhi, Vridhi, Digda, Sakpadangali, Nake. And from Radharani's toenails, Padangali, Nake, Amarnaka. All riddhis, unlimited sampat, unlimited wealth and opulence, and every possible attainment or desirable attainment emanates just from Radharani's her toenails. There's no need to worship Lakshmi Devi for wealth or position. There's no need to worship Durga or Shiva for siddhis or perfections, yogic perfections. Just chant Radha Kripa Kataksha, just worship Radharani. Apara Siddhi Riddhi Digda Satpadangalinake. Apara means unlimited. Apara means transcendental. That's Radharani. So she is Maha Maha Ati Ati Maha Bhaga, the most fortunate. And she may be there now, maybe not. There's some discussion about that. So now, Vishnu says that when he says Mahabhaga, yes, you are greatly fortunate, and your coming here has made me very fortunate. Because wherever someone, say someone's a happy person, some people by nature are very happy, that's their good stars and karma, whatever. So they're cheerful. So if you feel down or feel upset, you go meet that person, they cheer you up. They're like happy people. So now, when he's calling Mahabhaga, this is very fortunate night for me. I've really become fortunate because wherever you go, Vishnu says, wherever the gopis go, and that's what Krishna's implying, is wherever you go, you bring your fortune with you, and you make people, wherever you go, you make that person successful and fortunate and make him happy. So, all the gopis, because you have come here, I, Mahabhaga, have become greatly fortunate because you are the unlimited abodes of fortune and wealth and siddhi and riddhi and, of course, prem. Samadhi, siddhi, ishra, pranani, dahanat. The greatest siddhi. That's why it says, apara siddhi, riddhi, digda, satpunanglinage. Apara siddhi means transcendental perfection. And the sarva siddhi is prema. Ishvara prem, Krishna prem, gopi prem. So this is he welcomed them and says, oh, most fortunate ones. And then, this is a summary, I'm just reading. Then Krishna asked them what he could do for them. And he asked them, did you come to request a favor? What can I do to please you? That was the second question he asked. They had come hastily because you came very quickly. I played the flute, you ran here so fast. Is there some problem in the village? These inquiries or questions by Krishna, why the gopis came, show the various motives. This is a very nice point. I saw one book. The motivation of why people approach God. This is, of course, taking the whole Leela and discussion to relevant, our own position. Because on one level, you can see, this is our level, the gopis are devotees. I mean, they're obviously, we know who they are. Nijarupatiya, other Krishna's expansions, Radharani. But they're someone approaching God. And we are someone, some people, ladies and gentlemen, approaching God. So then Krishna is asking, why are you approaching me? Just like in Bhagavad Gita, it's telling Chaturvida Bhajante Mam Janat Sukhi in Orjanat. Four kinds of people approach God in Bhagavad Gita. Some because they want wealth, or they're suffering from misery, or they're seeking knowledge, or they really want to have a loving relationship with God. So then there's some inquiry. There's some inspection. When one approaches a big person, the person's thinking, what do you want? Why have you come? What is your motivation? You want my money? You want favor, this, that? So in one sense, this dialogue, this initial verse, number 18, is kind of indicative of the general relationship between a conditioned soul approaching God. Krishna almost seems to be cross-examining the gopis. You came for this reason? Or maybe that reason? Or what is the reason? So Krishna is examining their hearts on one level as God examines our hearts. What is our motivation? Do we have some selfish motivation in our approach to God? Or are we selfless? Adanana janana sundaram kapitam va jagadisha kamye mama janmani janmani shre bhavatad bhaktir hoitikam. I'm coming to you. I don't want anything. I'm not coming to take from God. I'm coming to give. Whatever he's given me that's worth offering back, I want to offer back. And whatever is not worth offering to him and not pleasing and satisfying to him, I want to remove that. Yoga kshemam bahamyam. What is not good in me, I don't want to offer that. I want to remove that. So my entire approach becomes pure and everything I have, my mind, there's that bhajan, manasik geha yokichimur. That one bhajan, Srila Prabhupada he sang that so much deep feeling. He said, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur, manasik geha yokichimur. said, "Oh my Lord, oh Bhagavan, my mind, my house, my everything, it's for you. I'm not holding anything back. Everything is for you." If you say manasa deha, mind and body, what else is there? Everything else is an expansion in terms of relationship and connection and attachment from that. Manasa deha yokichimur. So he starts with, this is it. If I give the mind, savai mana krishna padaravindiyora vachamsi vaikunta gunarnavanade. If I give the mind, then I've given everything. Wherever my mind settles, my words glorify. Wherever my mind settles, my consciousness remembers and hankers for. So that goes on. So there's the motives with which we approach God. Sometimes we approach God with a purpose of gaining blessings to improve our family life. Other people approach God out of frustration in social and family affairs. That's why he asked why they came, their approach. Now he asked, that was the second question. The third question, why you came, shows a third motive to approach God. Namely, the Brajagopis or anyone, even a conditioned soul like any of us, can approach God if we are. In other words, why do we approach God to begin with? Why did the gopis approach in terms of this particular verse? Because they were invited. They were summoned with the flute. They were called with the flute. Agaman, they came. Agaman, they came because they were called. They were invited. So when we get a call in the heart, after so many janams, God will call us to him. Oh, what are you doing? Nonsense. Why don't you turn to me? Turn to God. Look for God. Seek God. This is a tato brahma jignasu. Now is the time to inquire about the truth. That idea, of course, won't come in Sanskrit. I don't think so. But that idea that, oh, it's about time that I inquired, that I looked, I approached God. So that's what he's saying. Why have you come? So they came because they were inspired within their hearts to surrender to God for the motive of serving him, gaining his love and liberation to his kingdom of love in the spiritual world. This is pure bhakti, devoid of any ulterior personal or selfish motive. So devotees approaches everything. Even in social intercourse, the approach is everything. How you approach someone, even when you deal with your mother or father, when you're young and growing up. If your father's in a bad mood and you approach him at that time and ask for some money, you probably won't get any because it's not the right time. The timing is wrong. Or your attitude or your mood is wrong. So all of these things are very important when we approach sadhus, when we approach Vaishnavas, when we approach the Lord, when we approach the Holy Dham, when we approach the Shastras. You know, what is our attitude, our mentality, our heart? And that radiates in our very behavior. That resonates in our speech. And that is that which reveals the mentality of our approach. We're guided by Shastras to approach with submission. Tadvidhi pranipatena. Tadvidhi pranipatena. Parikrashnena sevaya. So pranipatena means this is the type of approach. How are we approaching a superior, a man or a spiritual personality or the Shastras, which are the abodes of knowledge, vidhi. Tadvidhi pranipatena. Parikrashnena. First, before we have any relationship or sambandha, when there's pariprashna, when there's questions and seva, that means that relationship or sambandha has been established. But first there's the approach, the tadvidhi pranipatena. Generally, our Srila Prabhupada, he says one should lie like a stick, pranipat. Pranipatena means lie like a stick. So that means before we lie physically like a stick, our mind and our ego, our hankar, must internally lie like a stick. This is the approach, the mental approach. That what you're thinking, I don't have anything. I am nirgun. I have no good spiritual qualities. I have so many qualities, bad ones. But now I'm approaching this saintly person, lady or gentleman or guru, etc. And so this is the approach. Krishna is telling the same thing. He's talking about the approach. It's not just throwing the body at the feet, because anyone can do that, roll at the feet, but the mind may be up on the top of Mount Everest. The mind is sitting on top of the Himalayas, and your body is lying at their feet. Tad vidhi pranipatena. So how we approach. So while ulterior selfish motives, they're not the right way. Devotee approach comes to Krishna out of love. And such a devotee, a pure-minded, humble-minded devotee, neither desires material gain nor liberation from samsara. They only want to love Krishna. What is the best reason for approaching God? This is the best reason. To simply want to love Krishna and serve Krishna. This was the mood of the Brajagopis. We're not here for any other karanam. And you're the sarvakarna karanam anyway. You're the cause of all causes. You're the cause that we're here. And we came here to serve your cause. Whatever you want, make us, break us, take us, shake us, leave us, join us, embrace us, trample us. Shlishyavam parvatam vanashtam madarshtam mamatam karotiva. We're here for you. Their approach, their mind, their actions, their behavior, everything is transparent, immaculate, pure. And they're our role models. We're to follow them. Their moods and mellows, their behaviors, their attitudes, their approach. How the gopis are approaching God. We're supposed to be gopi anugata, following the footsteps. So who is our God? Are we approaching Krishna and running to the Bamshiva? Yes. I wish it was so easy. We're approaching the murti of Krishna in the form of kripa. Krishna appears as a moving murti amongst us, a moving deity, a moving murti amongst us. And that moving murti that moves here and there is the kripa shakti murti of Sri Guru. Sri Guru. So what is our approach? Well, it's easy. You want to learn, you can learn so much behavior, so much achar, so much bhav, so much mela, so many things from all different levels. Our Gurudev said we should examine the verses of the Bhagavatam or any shastra from all angles of vision. Heart vision, mind vision, shastra vision, experience vision, all vision. Vision of surrender. So this was their mood of the gopis. They came to Krishna's side in the middle of the night. So there was no fear in their approach, no attachment in their approach, no personal consideration in their approach, no comfort in their approach. What will I get out of it? Oh, if I approach Krishna, will I get a room in the temple? Will I get food? They went out into the forest not considering what's going to happen next. As we mentioned in previous classes, once a married lady runs out of the house, especially 5,000 years ago, if it's detected that she ran out of the house and doesn't come back, she can never come back. And if she wants to go to her mother's house, the mother will say, no, out. She wants to go to her in-law's house, her father-in-law's house, no. So she has no recourse but to go to the forest. And so the gopis knew that or didn't know that. They didn't even care. There was no calculation in their approach to Krishna. That's the biggest point. No calculation. Whereas everything we do is sankhya, calculated. We calculate everything. We have what you call a calculator. We have a calculator right in here. It's right inside here is a big calculator. 7 inches or whatever, 6 inches long, 5 inches wide. It's big, 30 square inch calculator. This, right, 5 inches, 6 inches, whatever. Oh, this, that. This is, they ran to Krishna's side in the middle of the night in a lonely forest in answer to his flute song, inviting them, calling them forth to love him and serve him eternally in the Ras celebration of divine union. Although Krishna is inviting all of us to join in the divine Ras celebration of his eternal loving service, very few respond to that flute call and approach Krishna with a pure mind and heart to love him and serve him eternally. And that's really what it's all about. And I'd like to read Sri Jiva Goswami's commentary on this particular verse 18 also. He he is seeing, he's kind of explaining what this whole section is about, this Samla. He gives it that title. This begins verse 18 and on to practically the end of the chapter, 20 verses. This is a series of statements and counter replies. This is Samla, back and forth. Gopis, Krishna speaking, gopis replying or countering his statements. And Sri Jiva Goswami Pad, he's quoting Ujjwala Nilamani, which is Rupa Goswami's. And he says that this type of conversation is a type of anubhav, this external presentation of the love and emotions that have risen in the heart to the point of a conversation like this, back and forth. And he calls it a playful, this samlap, this prem samlap, this dialogue or conversation between Radha and Krishna, a playful verbal duel. Like sometimes they have duel, the general idea when you say dueling is think of some sword, people have swords and top, 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 like this. You know. And sometimes in colleges or high schools, that's a sport, and you wear some mask and top, 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 dueling. But of course, we know more about social dueling, ego dueling. My ego is dueling with you, and husbands and wives are always dueling. It's a classic. At least in India, I don't know so much about Western marriages and whatnot. But I was married, and I'm definitely Westerner. And I was dueling quite a bit. And what I found is that whatever, there's dueling, which dueling means some combat. You're dueling, oh, it's you versus the other person when you're with the swords and you want to, you know, give them, win the match or whatever. And it's competition, it's not do or die, win or lose, live or die. But in family situation, husbands and wives, exactly. For example, it's a morning time and the husband and wife come onto the veranda. The husband looks out, oh, Devi, it's such a beautiful sky, it's such a beautiful day today, very bright sun. And then the wife goes, no, no, see, there's that cloud over there. There's one big cloud. Just see there, I think it's going to rain. He says, ah, hey, can't you appreciate it's a beautiful day? Then top, top, top. And then always, What I found, and as I observed, because I sometimes have spent a night in some grihastas' homes, or maybe two maximum, and hardly ever. And I'm in my room chanting, and I hear the dialogue. One says black, the other one says white. It's like this ego dueling is going on. So Krishna has two purposes in his prem samlap. Krishna's a calculating person, apparently. We're not allowed to calculate when we approach Krishna. We put everything, we should become blank slate, clear, everything clear. Here, Krishna, here I am. Do whatever you want with me. I am yours, I am yours, I am yours. Tave vasmi, na jivami toya vina, iti vigaya, Devi, or Radha Devi, nayamam charnantikam. So he says, Srila Jiva Goswami Pad, Krishna has two purposes in his engaging the prem samlap with the Brajagopis. One, to attract the Brajagopis who have now become mesmerized, hypnotized by his flute and his other qualities. And two, to test their love with jesting, which joking, and indifferent, rejecting language. And So that's the mentality, the reasoning that Krishna is using, why he's using this, employing this idea, or this way of talking. Now, Sri Jiva Goswami Charan says the coward damsels have two purposes in their samlap with Krishna. One, to reject and not to accept Krishna's words of rejection. Krishna speaking indifferently, contrary, I'm not interested, go home. What are you doing here? It's very frightening and fearful here. There's dangerous creatures. You should go. And he wants to discourage them and speak rejecting words. And the gopis are thinking, well, when we speak, we're going to reject his rejecting words. And then the second thing in the gopis' reply, they're going to express in their words of rejecting Krishna's words of indifference, their intense longing to be with Krishna, to serve and to love him. And Srila Jiva Goswami Pad says, such dialogues among lovers act to increase their ras and mutual ecstasy. So this is the ideas, some ideas, unlimited ideas of this verse from different levels. It's all about increasing the sweet taste in love. It's very surprising opening for a love story, but that just makes it, it's not a regular love story. You never find usually love stories like this. That's why it's transcendental. Even the very onset of the story, the beginning of the Leela, is something extraordinary. So many love novels have been written, but and love stories and movies, but never the opening scene is like this. Welcome, swagatam. Something wrong? Why do you came? So I want to start verse 19 now. This is text 19 from chapter 29. Rajan yesha gora rupa gora sattva nishevita pratiyata rajam neha steyam stribi sumadhyama. Stribi sumadhyama. Some introduction I want to give to this verse. And well, translation, of course, that should be the first thing, obviously. Translation. Rajanyesha gora rupa gora sattva nishevita patiyata rajam neha steyam stribi sumadhyama. And they are BBT translation. This night, this is Krishna, his second statement or sentence, I suppose, dialogue. This night is quite frightening, O gopis, and frightening creatures are lurking about. You should return to Braj, slender waisted girls. This is not a proper place for women. Now, Srila Prabhupada's translation is a little bit more elaborate. He says, my dear friends, which means Sakis, O Priya Sakis, you must know now that it is the dead of night and the forest is very dangerous. At this time, all the ferocious jungle animals, tigers, bears, jackals, and wolves are prowling in the forest. Therefore, it's very dangerous for you. You cannot select a secure place right now. Everywhere you go, you'll find these animals are loitering to find their prey. I think, therefore, you're taking a great risk in coming here in the dead of night. Please turn back immediately without delay. This is Srila Prabhupada's translation. Sweet, madhur, madhur, madhur. This is the Krishna book. Because I remember once when at BBT, they printed the 10th canto, and we were always a little sad when years ago when it first came out. We came to know, well, of course we knew before, that Prabhupada only finished word for word and up to chapter 13 of the 10th canto. Then he entered the Nitya Leela of Radha and Krishna. And we were thinking, oh, how wonderful it would be to hear Prabhupada's translations and commentaries on the entire Ras Leela and the rest of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, especially. And then we were reading Krishna book one day, and we said, wait a minute, it's all here. I saw it's all here. Verse by verse is translated. Some few verses are missing here and there. In Prabhupada's Krishna book, he doesn't appear to translate them exactly. But he did. And so we were very happy to present those for everyone. And to relish those realized translations, you can see the translator of Shastra is a pretty important element to the understanding of the reader and the accuracy of the presentation of the actual Sanskrit, the direct meaning, the parokshavad, the indirect meaning, the ras, the exchange. So much, I'm really amazed with how Prabhupada translates. So in this verse, the night is quite frightening and there's frightening creatures. Please return, O slender-waisted ones. This is the several verses that follow this, there's what they call this double meaning. This is very prominent in Shastra, especially Bhagavatam and the Rasa Shastras. There's outside meaning and inside meaning. And they have some term, they say double entendre. I suppose that's French or something. Double entendre. And there's two meanings, or two types of expressions, cleverly expressing. So Krishna, what he's doing, and some, he's speaking on one level, and people that want to criticize Krishna or his rasa dance as being immoral or irreligious or unjust or not morally acceptable, they'll be defeated, actually, if they read the Rasa-lila. Because Krishna is actually, if you examine Krishna and his statements on one level, in this double entendre, this outer meaning, he's preaching ethics, he's preaching morality, he's preaching dharma and religion, and he's showing all good intentions. He's not showing that he's some mischief maker or womanizer or some playboy or something like this, some lumpat. His own dialogue is there for everyone to read and analyze, at least externally. So he's actually covering himself very nicely. But then the internal meaning is where we find the true heart of Krishna. That's like there's different sides of a person. There's the heart of the person and the mind and external behavior. It's very difficult to know the heart of the person, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra. The external behavior does oftentimes has nothing to do with the internal position of the heart. You know the personality of Pundarik Vidyaniti. Pundarik Vidyaniti and Gaur Lila externally appear to be maybe a pounds, shillings, and pence person, a materialistic person with fancy clothes. But then when he simply heard, I believe Gadadhara Pandit recited a verse about the unbelievable compassion of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Aho Bhakti Stana Kalakuta, whatever. I believe it was that verse that he opened with, that he explained, because Mukunda, I believe it was Mukunda Das, he was doubtful about the, he was judging the cover, and he didn't understand the mind, the point I'm saying, you can't understand the mind and heart of someone by looking at their externals. So when Gadadhara Pandit recited this verse glorifying Krishna's compassion that someone come up to murder him and poison him, then he makes her his datri. He loves her. He accepts her. He embraces her. He embraces her, flies in the sky with her some frequent flyer miles. And then he comes down and then he says, oh, you're so nice. You're such a beautiful lady, so loving and kind. You came to kill me. You came to poison me, Putana. But you offered your breast, and there's also some love there, some vatsalya. So now, oh, come on, you become my mother. And she went to Goloka. When Pundarik heard that, then his heart came out, became fully prakat, exposed, and Mukunda was amazed. Wow. Threw off his shirt and rolling on the ground, all sattvic vikars, totally ecstatic, just hearing one verse from the Bhagavatam. So this internal meaning of the verses is difficult for the ordinary people to understand. And that's the nature of Sanskrit, that it can be, like this verse, it says, Rajanyesha Gora Rupa, and then it says, Gora Rupa, Gora Sattva. And then the Rupa, the long A, Rupa Gora. So Gora even sounds like what it means. It means horrible, fearsome, horrible creatures, bears and tigers and lions that inhabit the forest at night. Gora Rup. But then it says Gora Rupa Gora. So then this Rupa Gora means Agora, then the internal meaning, which not everyone will see, means there aren't any fearsome creatures here. This is Vrindavan. And all these creatures are simply ornaments for my environment. They're simply serving me. The lions serve me. And the tigers at night, they serve me. If Radharani wants to run away, she comes to meet me and then she wants to leave. Then the tiger, ha! And Radharani, ho! Tiger, she runs back and jumps in Krishna's arms. So that's not a fearsome creature. That's a friendly creature. He's anukulya to Krishna's love affairs. Krishna, Radharani, hey, why you came late? I'm leaving. Ha! Oh, what's that? And she runs. So that will get into. This is just the introduction. So Sanskrit is like this, that it can be broken down in different ways to give opposite contradictory expressions, and we can see that clearly in the life of Nimai Pandit. Nimai Pandit in his Mayapur Leela and his Pandit Leela, he would argue with his students, now defeat this argument. And they said, we can't do it. Then he would take his own statements and defeat them because he was so expert in Sanskrit. So now Krishna starts speaking playful words, duplicious words. His playful words are spoken to the Braja Gopis that explain his variegated interests and motives. He's preaching to them to uphold their Sri Dharma and go back home, be proper wives. And then at the same time, he's testing the intensity of their divine love. Because if anyone has attachment to any of these things, then they can attain the eternal intimate love of Krishna. Sarvadharman Vrityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. So he preached, and then it's internally he's bewildering them, and then he's saying, actually, the greatest dharma is to be with me. The greatest dharma is to attain my association. The greatest dharma is to please me in the most intimate way. This is paro dharma. Paro dharma means the dharma of the gopis. That's paro dharma. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, it says paro dharma. The paro dharma means, paro means the gopis' love, the prem bhakti of the gopis. This is paro dharma. So that's the kind of the introduction to this whole thing. That's the high paro. It's interesting because in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, Vyasadeva is talking about the tenth canto. What to speak of the first canto in the first verse? Janmad yasya yataha. Jiva Goswami says, Janmad yasya, Janmad adi. Adi. This adi word, Janmad adi, beginning with word. This is actually Vedanta Sutra, Janmad yasya yataha. Janmad yasya yataha. This is maybe first verse, Vedanta Sutra number one. It says everything, the source of everything. The absolute is the source of everything. The janma, the cause, the source. And that's in the first invocation verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam number one, Janmad yasya. In that is the, you can say, the sutra that's going to indicate what special revelation and contribution will this Bhagavad Puran give. It will explain the Adi Ras. Janmad Adi. Janmad Adi Yasya Yataha. Adi means Adi Ras. Adi Ras means Madhurya, Parakiya Bhava of Radha and Krishna. That everything, this is the centermost, the topmost relationship. This is the Parodharma. So he mentions that in verse 1, and then later in the first canto, he talks about Parodharma. And then he's talking about Parodharma. He's talking about Adi Ras. We don't find out really until we come here to the 10th canto, in the exchange of Krishna and the gopis, because they are the gopis of Vrindavan, especially Radharani, they are the embodiments of para-bhakti. And that's exactly the kind of bhakti that one gets if he hears the Rasa-lila. It says, param-bhakti pratilabhyate, param-bhakti bhagavati pratilabhyate kamam vidrogam. This is 10:33-39. Where Vyasadeva and Shukadeva Goswami is saying, this param bhakti bhagavati pratilabhyate. I told you about the Adi Ras in the beginning, first verse. I glorified paro dharma, paro bhakti, pro dharma, which is this dharma, in the first canto. And now I'll give it to you. I described about it in the Ras Lila. What is para bhakti? And who are the exemplars of para bhakti, the gopis of Braj? And now at the end of the whole conclusion, it said, and this Rasa-lila will give that bhakti to you. First it's presented, then it's glorified, then it's shown, and then it's offered freely. All you have to do is shradanvita, shradanvita, shunyat, with intense faith and submission, hear this Rasa-lila. You get this. And then when you get, like Prabhupada used to say, if you have $1,000,000, all your $10 problems are finished. It's, oh, I owe this person $1,000, that person $1,000. Okay, here's 10 million. Well, then that's the end of those problems. So it says, Kamam Rid Rogam Pahinoti Yachirina Dira. It says that, okay, take parabhakti, then anything, because there's everything is below that. Once you have parabhakti, brajabhakti, then anything and everything is below that, and just is gone. And the main thing that's gone, the main thing that's gone is vidrogam kamam, because lust creates every other, everything is created by lust. If lust goes, everything goes. Our entire world goes. Our creation goes. Our everything goes if lust goes. So that, you just mentioned one thing. It's a hole in one. Kamam ridrogam pahinoti yachirendira. So he says, this is it. The ridrog, rogi, the heart disease of lust, which includes attachment, that includes anger, it includes envy, it includes families, it includes birth and death, it includes samsara, everything. Is there lust includes your clothes, everything that. So this is whole discussion, and this Prem Samlap is all about this bringing out, showing what is this para bhakti and this intense love of the gopis, and Krishna's bringing it out. Come on, bring it out, show it. Krishna's showing the love, the intense love in the gopis' hearts, and that's what Guru does. Guru's Prabhav, he tries to draw the love out of your heart. Sometimes he insults you, and appears to insult you, or criticizes, or checks you, or corrects you. But he loves, Guru loves Krishna. And he loves his parts and parcels. If some of those parts and parcels become his students, then they're Krishna before him. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, oh, you're my Prabhus. Prabhu is Gauranga. Prabhu is Gauranga everywhere in Chaitanya. Prabhu, Prabhu, Prabhu. Prabhu means Gauranga. Gauranga is Krishna, Radha Krishna. So the Shishya, the students, the Guru sees them as Gauranga, Prabhu. Oh, Prabhu. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, look, how may I serve you? How may I assist you to bring out all your love? Speak to you in a contrary way, ignore you, speak indifferently. Why is Guru ignoring me? Then you say, oh, forget this guru. And you run away. And then the Leela ends. Guru is taking student, pulling love out of the heart. That's Krishna's pulling love out of the gopis' hearts. Let's begin. Oh, actually, this is, I'm very happy not for this calculated reason. But I'm very happy you're here, because there's one point I heard in relation to this verse 18. And let's see what you think of this one. This is a very good point. this is what I've heard and here on the banks of Radhakund. And it's like this. The previous verse we just, I'm sorry, I forgot this, verse 18. It says, Brutagaman karanam. This brutagaman. So agaman means you're coming. Please tell us the reason you're coming. So one renowned acharya, Gaudiya Vaishnava acharya, was asked a question. Where do we find, what was the question? He says, is Manjari Sarup, Saki, Manjari Saki, is Manjari Sarup found anywhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam? This is the question. Is Manjari Sarup found anywhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam? And this acharya gave this answer. He said, yes, at least we can see here in chapter 29, verse 18, in this last line, Bruta Agaman Karanam. He focused on the word Agaman. That the speaker here, Shukadeva Goswami, is sitting somewhere around Delhi in Shukratala under some banyan tree near the Ganga, with Maharaj Parikshit and so many rishis, sages, etc., speaking Bhagavatam, Saptaha, 7 days of Bhagavatam. But he used this word agaman, which is translated, Krishna is saying, what is the reason, the karanam, agaman karanam, what is the reason for your coming here? So the acharya says, how can Shukadeva Goswami say that you're coming here, unless this proves that although Shukadeva is in his sadhaka group, we could say, or guru group, whatever, preaching Bhagavatam, when he's in his samadhi of speaking this, actually, he's entered Shukadev, that is. Shukadev Goswami is in his Mandri Sarup. This verse, this word, Agaman, indicates that Shukadev Goswami is, so that, this is where Mandri Sarup is mentioned. Shukadev Goswami is in his Mandri Sarup, and he's there in the forest or somewhere near Krishna, and as Krishna is seeing the gopis coming, that Mandri is also there, maybe preparing services for the gopis, because Mandris often go ahead to the Sanket, to the appointed place, and they sweep or they pick garlands or they make arrangements because that's their some of their sevas. They don't all accompany Radharani as Nataraj. There's what they call advanced party. They make arrangements, like the guru travels. Those devotees make arrangements. So Mandris go there. So it's feasible, but this is what was said. In his Mandri Sarup, Shukadev Goswami is there, maybe not visible to Krishna, but doing something, arranging for the pleasure of the gopis and the whole lila, maybe bringing the musical instruments out of the storehouse or whatever for the rasa dance. And they have Vrindadevi has so many storehouses everywhere with musical instruments and all these things. And because of that, then he can say, they're coming. As Krishna say, oh, what's the reason for your coming? I'm also there, and the gopis are coming. So this verse, this was told here. This indicates that this indicates Mandri Sarup, and it's specifically saying that.